Mini episode 991 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode number 991. This is FDH managing partner Rick Morris here today with one of our favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries, my good friend Russ Cohen, also the proprietor of Sportsology, one of the great traditions here in the FDH Lounge, to preview the Stanley Cup Final every year. In this case, of course, the 2008 Stanley Cup Final, the one that we all saw coming before the season. All of us out there are betting on it in Vegas, Washington versus Vegas. And as I joked at you on Twitter the other night, Russ, can you believe Washington made it to the Stanley Cup Final? Also Las Vegas in their first year, too. That's a little unlikely as well.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. It is. With Vegas, I mean, the start of the year, before the season began, I thought it would be historically bad just because I didn't know if you could put all these players together with no continuity, get anything. But Gallant did a great job. I knew Fleury would be great. I wasn't worried about him, but I was worried about everything else, the defense in front of him, and it's all worked out great. I really picked it. You know, I believed in their regular season, probably from mid-season on, I did. But then, even in the playoffs, I picked against them a little bit until the conference finals, and I was on board, and so I had to really look at things, and I said, no, you know what, that's for real. As far as the Caps, it was interesting because to start the season, I thought they were a little weakened, but they definitely could make the playoffs. Then as matchup against Pittsburgh, and I definitely picked Pittsburgh because I picked them in the preseason to make it to the Stanley Cup, but I was talking about it in that series, like, hey, I still think there's a chance they could win this. And when I covered game six out there when Washington did slay the dragon, so to speak, and when that happened, then I became a big believer in the Caps and have been picking them ever since as well, because I got to see a little glimpse into what was going on, like live, but also in the locker room. And so that made me a little bit more of a believer.
Yeah, I can understand that. And again, for Washington, it's one of these strange kind of things where, the series with them in Pittsburgh, I will give myself some credit here. I picked Washington in that series just as I picked St. Louis a couple of years back when they finally beat Chicago. I have a pretty good instinct for when it's about to tip the other way. I'm not going to put myself over completely in terms of prognostications because I'm right about 500 for the whole playoffs at this point, but I call it a gut feeling. I just had a feeling they were going to get past Pittsburgh there. But this is a thing where, and there's certainly more to talk about, I think, with Vegas in terms of the oddities, but with Washington, again, the fact that they beat Pittsburgh finally and the way that they have looked here, and as we get into, I have some statistical breakdowns to get into in a little bit here with you as well, but this is the thing. You want to talk about an atypical Caps season, all you got to do is look at it this way, whether it be Holtby or really the entire team, the Caps much better in the postseason than they've been in the regular season. Not that it was a bad regular season, but they've really looked outstanding in the postseason. And again, it's always the opposite for Washington. That's been the story since the beginning of time. And thus far, they've flipped that narrative on its ear.
Yeah, I think the interesting things for Washington is, you know, Philip Grubauer got the first couple starts, didn't work out for him. Then Braden Holtby got in there, and it took a little while for him to get fully locked in, but then he did get fully locked in, so maybe that was a really good move by Trotz to sort of, like, let him sit and stew and give Grubauer some, like, a benefit because, hey, you know, he did have a really good season this year and did pick up a lot of the slack. And then there was an issue on defense where the Caps had acquired Jakub Jurecek from Montreal, and they were using him. And boy, he just wasn't playing well, and there were goals given up when he was on the ice, and I just kept saying, I don't understand why he's there, why Christian Juice can't be out there, and Chuck Kirby, but he didn't. But he did put Christian Juice in, and that's made a big difference solidifying their defense. And I felt like that was the one thing that was a little askew for the Caps that maybe they wouldn't be able to overcome if they didn't do something. And they did something, and it's really worked out well. And people may remember Pear Juice was his dad, and he played in the NHL, and he was a pretty good player in his own right. But Christian, you know, he's not really there for points. He is just there for, like, the puck moving and everything else. But in 17 games, you know, he's a +4. That's kind of nice to be able to plug that in when the other guy was a minus. So it seems simple, but at the time, I remember when I was saying it, you know, the Caps weren't looking so good, and, you know, it definitely was the right move, and I got to give Barry Trotz all the credit for that move.
Absolutely, he really does. He has done a masterful job of moving the pieces around, and for a guy who's had a rap being a postseason coach in the past, again, yep. He, like the players on his team, they have really flipped that narrative, as I said, thus far on its ear. You go to Vegas, and again, never before in any major sport in our lifetimes, and I'm going to go out on a limb and say never again, are we going to be discussing a team in the championship round and reviewing their entire formation over the last 12 months. I mean, I believe you were out there for the expansion draft last year, were you not?
No.
Okay, my bad. That's an invented memory. But I remember you were covering it at the time, and we had something about it, yes. Of course, in Pro Hockey Draftology 2017. By the way, the 2018 version coming soon. I remember your coverage of it at the time. There's been some talk about, you know, are things going to be adjusted a little bit when and if Seattle comes up next? I think it's not going to be the case in terms of structure in the league, because I think the all-time cautionary example in pro sports has been, you look at Carolina and Jacksonville coming into the NFL, and the league deciding to get punitive after both of them were able to make it to Championship Sunday in their second seasons. And 20 years of the new Cleveland Browns being a dumpster fire, there are many reasons for that, but not least of which was the fact that the league changed the rules completely. We can't ever have this happen again. I think all leagues have learned from that, and I think they've learned that it's much better to err on the side of a team like Vegas being this successful than a team being a complete embarrassment to the league, much less a historic franchise like the Cleveland Browns. If the league wants to crack a market as competitive as Seattle, and I sort of have my doubts about that, just because, again, there is so much competition for the sports dollar up there, even the fact that their soccer team is basically considered to be big league in that market. Now, when you look at some of the tech companies and aerospace and whatever up there, maybe they figure there's enough money to go around. But at the same time...
I got the X factor. The X factor is, and I've done this...
Okay.
When I go to Vancouver, I fly in through Seattle and I drive to Vancouver. It's literally a little under 2 hours. It's an easy drive.
Yeah.
They will get plenty of Canadians going to games.
Interesting. Okay. All right. I hadn't taken that into account. And I know they're thinking that there's going to be a immediate rivalry there with Vancouver, and that may very well be the
case.
But
they'll get them just for any games because, you know, Canadians go hockey, and they'll go, if they can't get tickets to Vancouver, they'll go see games. They'll go see Seattle games.
Right.
They will.
But I think you would agree with me that the NHL and other leagues have learned from the historic blunder of the NFL circa 1999, and that the sense of
are you proclaiming the Browns days of blunder are over? Is that
I'm not capping it at 20 years, Russ. I'm just saying it's about 20 years so far. Of course, we let your Jets get Sam Darnold, which you know had me just about slashing my wrists on that one.
I know. I was very happy.
You didn't have to go 0-16 and you still got him. It's amazing how that worked out. So, yeah, so I think, you know, the NHL is not going to rig it against Seattle in any kind of a way to make up for what happened with Vegas. What I would be surprised, again, if you didn't agree with me on this one, is from a business perspective, when you're looking at teams trying to induce Seattle to take certain players, I think there's an awful lot of cautionary tales from the expansion draft last year, right down to Pittsburgh getting on their knees and saying, pretty please, please take Marc-Andre Fleury off of our hands. But some of the deals that Florida made and other teams like that, I think you'll see less of that kind of stuff just for fear of looking foolish in the aftermath as some of the teams did when they got players plucked that they very overtly wanted to get rid of.
Yeah, no question. Actually, I've been coming out and saying that for about a week and a half, that it seems to have just simply gone with the, hey, these are the unprotected guys, take who you want, instead of trying to control it. I don't even know if Vegas would be a playoff team, because they got all kinds of extra players. And, you know, two-thirds of that second line for them came from the Minnesota Wild in Alex Tuck and Hala. And the funny thing is, you know, Tuck was a really good draft pick. Like, I was very high on him in the draft, and I knew he would be a really good NHL player. He just wasn't getting a chance there. And that's a story for a lot of the guys on Vegas. But, yeah, to answer your question, I agree with that.
And you look at all the factors in this, and if we go in sort of reverse chronological order, I'm not saying that necessarily Vegas got lucky in some ways with things like this, but again, playing in certainly the weaker division in the Western Conference, their playoff run certainly easier than it would have been coming out of the Central Division. You catch Winnipeg coming out of that all-time epic series against Nashville, a real heavyweight title fight. That Winnipeg really didn't seem like themselves sort of during that series. So again, and I'm not saying any of this to diminish Vegas, but it's really when people want to look back at this in the history books, I think it's going to be a perfect storm of so many different things that happened. Again, like we just said, from the expansion draft, some of the ill-considered business dealings of some of the teams there, some personnel moves that they'd like to have back, the schedule being in that division there, the playoff format coming out of the Pacific Division and facing a Kings and Sharks teams that didn't really weren't really geared up to sort of stop them. And
the Vegas flu. I mean, the Vegas flu was a big deal because when teams were just coming in there for the first time and sort of getting to experience Vegas and then trying to have to concentrate on hockey, it was affecting the opponent. It was. And it was giving Vegas an amazing home ice advantage in the regular season for at least half the season, maybe a little longer.
Yeah, and it did seem like teams were adjusting as the year went along. There's an additional factor as well that can't be ignored, and this is one that we're probably going to want to gloss over this relatively quickly because it's uncomfortable to talk about, but when you're looking at the totality of how it happened, you have to acknowledge that it's part of it. It's ironic that it's Washington in the final here, their first one since 1998. I remember the 98 final, my Red Wings going back there, going back-to-back in that Stanley Cup final. That was a Red Wing team that year. That had absolute, if anybody was wondering what the motivation was going to be coming off of the cup, unfortunately, we only had to wait 6 days. The accident with Konstantinov and the other guys and the just superhuman motivation that team had and the way that they played together in a way that only tragedy really kind of brings out in you. And you go back to Vegas at the beginning of the year, everything out there with the massacre that happened out there, in the first week of this team coming together on the ice and questions coming in about how much the community was necessarily going to take to them and vice versa and how much they basically drew from the community and put back into the community with that great start that they had. And it's uncomfortable to talk about in a life and death, you know, context here. And again, I think, you know, you'd have to be a really sick person as a Vegas fan to say, oh, it was all worth it. But you look at it and that's the way life works out a lot of times, Russ, that you, sure. You get these things thrown at you. And if you handle it the right way, you come out of it stronger. And Vegas came out of that with motivation that not any other team in the league had this year.
No, I think there was definitely that was a galvanizing moment. I mean, it, you know, shouldn't have happened, but it was. So I think that's a little bit of a factor. And I think I just think the factor of, you know, how the coach was summarily dismissed by Florida, Gerard Gallant was out on the curb. His luggage was there. We all saw it on the 21st Century. We saw the horrifying video of him trying to get a cab with everything he had because he wasn't the coach anymore. And, you know, a lot of those players, you know, the teams chose to get rid of them. And so they all did band together. I still think that was the greater part of their success, but everything plays into it.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, and that's very wrong to see something like that happen to Gerard Gallant. Let's be honest, it's funny when it happens to a guy like Lane Kiffin, but it's wrong when it happens to a guy like Gerard Gallant. And all the just kind of odd ties here in this series. George McPhee coming over and doing such a masterful job. They'll be talking about his work for decades now. And again, after he didn't get a chance to finish the job in D.C., he put together most of the nucleus that's there. He's not around to see them get back to the Cup Final this year.
That happens a lot, right? It happens to a lot of GMs in the league, and that's fairly common. It's not common that, you know, you end up facing that other team in the Stanley Cup. That's definitely uncommon. I would say that. And then also David Conte, who won multiple championships with the Devils and helped draft so many great players there, you know, including Brodeur and Scott Stevens, and you could just name the list, Scott Niedermayer. He was hired by Vegas. He's their pro scout. I've spoken to David probably four or five times during the year this year, and you know, I saw him out there last year when they weren't a team hard at work, and so he gets a lot of credit too, because you know, he was watching all these players and trying to figure out who was going to shake loose and who did they want.
Right. And I go back to also, too, when you're looking at these sort of odd connections between the teams here, that it is not, as we touched on here, a recent thing of Pittsburgh dominating Washington in the playoffs. There was a whole nother run back from the 80s and 90s where that was the case as well. Historic trauma, if you're a Caps fan, in terms of these matchups. And in recent years, it's been Marc-Andre Fleury predominantly, not always, but predominantly the goalie stopping them on the other side. Now it's Marc-Andre Fleury looking to stop them in the Stanley Cup final. So, you know, Ovechkin and some of these other guys, Backstrom, etc., would be less than human if they weren't looking at across the ice going, not again.
Yeah, no question. And that's, you know, the Fleury thing is really a great story, because even early in the year when he got injured, everybody thought, oh, well, you know, this is it. This is when Vegas starts taking a nosedive. And they were playing goalies that Dylan Ferguson and Maxime Lagasse, guys with zero NHL experience, and getting by. And Malcolm Subban, who I thought was always going to be a pretty decent goalie in the league, but he had trouble with Boston, and he comes in, and that was as amazing as anything else, is that that whole season could have been derailed when all that happened, and it wasn't.
Yeah, that's the thing with Vegas, that it's there's probably even things we haven't even mentioned yet, that it's just a confluence of so many different circumstances, and you take even one of them out of the mix, and they may not even be here at this point. It is just absolutely incredible. As I teased a little bit earlier, I have a statistical breakdown here. I'm going to go through a couple of different categories. We're doing a new ultimate quantitative baseline here for teams. We've been doing it for fantasy with fantasydrafthelp.com. Started doing it with the NFL. We talked about it around the time of the NFL draft. Now for hockey, using power play percentage, penalty kill percentage, Fenwick, shooting percentage, save percentage, even strength goals allowed, and one additional category here, which is 50%, the final FDH power rankings at the end of the season here, 50% schedule strength based on those power rankings. So to go through these here, all right, on the points plus schedule strength, Vegas was tied for third, Washington was 17th. Power play percentage, Vegas 11th, Washington 7th. Penalty kill, Vegas 10th, Washington 15th. Fenwick, Vegas 10th, Washington 28th. Interesting. Shooting percentage, Vegas 8th, Washington 2nd. Washington beating them even with Carlson playing for Vegas. Interesting. Save percentage, Vegas 12th and Washington 13th. Even strength goals, Vegas 3rd, Washington tied for 6th. Even strength goals against, Washington 12th, Vegas 13th. So in most of these, at least a narrow lead for Vegas in the categories here, which goes back to what I said before about Washington. This is such a strange year for them, but great if you're a Caps fan, where they've actually been better as a playoff team than they've been during the regular season.
Yeah, that's an amazing thing. But sometimes that's what happens, right? You just have. That's why so many teams say you just have to get in there.
Yep.
You just have to get in the tournament, get in the, have a chance to do it. You never know when it's all going to click. And it's all clicked for them. I do have another amazing thing for you, and I can't take credit. I saw this online, but because I wasn't watching college hockey back then. But on the 1978-79 Bulls varsity hockey team, which I know you watched intently.
Yes.
George McPhee and Brian McClellan were teammates on that.
Nice.
And so, and now they're opposing GMs. And actually also on that team, Tim Morrow, who went on to greatness with the Islanders and the Olympic gold. That's pretty amazing if you think about the randomness of that.
It really is. I should have known about George McPhee being a Falcon. I didn't know that. Of course, that's my mom's alma mater, and I was just up for a game. Yeah, I was up for a game the season before this one with actually our FDH golf editor, Mr. Flatstick Tom Denk, who was a Bowling Green alum, and I was down the concourse looking around, and I saw a picture of Ken Morrow, but I did not know that about George McPhee as well. Very interesting.
Yep. At GM's teammates on the... I'm Bowling Green back in the 70s.
There's a lot of guys that I am just realizing in 2018 went to Bowling Green. Right around the time of the Super Bowl, we did some analysis with the great Phil Villapiano from the Raider teams in the 70s. I did not realize
he was
a Falcon.
One of the great cheaters of all time.
I didn't think you would be a fan as a Jets fan, but yeah, I didn't realize Phil was a Falcon. That was pretty cool. But
yeah, I didn't know that either.
Yeah.
I just remember him cheating any minute, being as dirty a player as you could be. But he was good. His big claim to fame was when he was on the Superstars. Man, he lifted, I want to say, the cleaning jerk or something. Oh my God, this guy was just pushing major weight.
Would it surprise you at all to know that his best friend is Conrad Doebler?
No, because he was probably the second dirtiest or the dirtiest guy in the game. They probably talked about all the different things they would do in the scrum, you know, putting thumbs in guys' eyes and whatever.
Oh, but see, and here's a logical segue. Some of the things we're going to get along the glass in this series here during the Stanley Cup Final, we're going to get that in some of the battles along the glass here. And this is one of these things where it's always fascinating stylistically, because you look at playoff matchups from years past and years when, say, Montreal would kind of limp into the playoffs as a lower seed, Boston as a higher seed, but then Montreal would end up skating circles around them. Well, Vegas, en route to going, I believe, 12-3 through the Western Conference playoffs, they've been using speed to their advantage. Conversely, you look at the East, and you look at Washington being bigger than Tampa Bay, and they were able to make the style clash work in that way. So classic kind of size versus speed thing here. Each team has obviously been able to dictate their style of play. Clearly, whoever does that in this series is going to have the huge advantage and probably win. How do you kind of look at that in terms of the X's and O's coming in on this whole size versus speed thing?
Well, Vegas does have a couple guys in Derek Englund, who you remember when he was with Pittsburgh. And matter of fact, he's in another amazing story, because we all remember when he was taken in the expansion draft, they were pretty much saying, like, yeah, this will be his last year, and then he'll transition to the front office because he was born in Las Vegas. And guy's had a great year. Like, he's had a total career resurgence. And they were basically saying this is him being put out to pasture. And so, but they have him and Ryan Reeves, also another ex-Penguin there. And those guys can help pick up the slack a little bit that Tampa really couldn't on the physical side. But still, with Orpik and Devontae Smith-Pelly and Tom Wilson and Ovechkin, who has been averaging like 20 hits a game or more, still a tall order, because those guys are really going to make you pay. And TJ Oshie is actually a guy who's up in the league leader in hits, and you know, we always sort of think about him in as a not a finesse player, but a guy who's a really skilled guy, but he's a pretty tough guy too. And so that's that is the edge that Washington has, and Washington is able to sort of drag you into the gutter. And they did that to the last game with Tampa. They had Braden Coburn coming out of the box, ready to fight Wilson. That was a win for Tom Wilson. The minute I saw that happen, I was like, A, Coburn's going to lose this fight. But B, it was just going to be a situation of Wilson's got this. Like, this is going to be good for the Caps now, because he's winning the psychological warfare game here.
Yeah, and those things are very important as they go along. One of the things when we're looking at statistics here, I'll be very interested to ask you about this, because there's a stat that I hadn't really kind of thought of in this way previously here. And looking that I made a crack about this before with William Karlsson with his 23.4 shot percent success rate this year, which is unheard of. That's one of those things where, again, I think you come into it and you assume that it's a little bit kind of fluky, just that it's been that kind of great, that kind of unrepresentative of the rest of his career. But I'd almost seen somebody make a reference to it kind of in a way, and I never really thought of that percentage as being much like batting average on balls in play, where, you know, generally it's supposed to be around 300, and if it's either way, then it's like way out of whack. I don't think of that as a category that's like that, because I think of it as being more skill-based than batting average on balls in play. But maybe the point that was being made, and I wish I could remember where, is that if it's a variance that far above, that maybe it is like BABIP, just in terms of the statistical unlikelihood of it and of that manifesting itself over an even larger period of time.
I'm going to say I can't draw any kind of conclusion that way. Maybe I'm just not smart enough. I think with William Karlsson, it was opportunity. He did get a fair amount of opportunity with Columbus, but it wasn't like he was ever on the top power play. And he did have some good lines, but he was never playing with their best guys. And so I just feel like with Vegas getting top power play and everything else, that he finally got the chance. And I've always liked him. Did I know he's going to score 43 goals? No. But I did think he could score 20 in the NHL. So, and that was more than the six that he actually did up to this point, right? So
yeah.
I give it great credit. I don't think he's a total fluke. Same with Marchessault. I mean, I really liked him when he was with the Hartford Wolfpack and the Rangers, but the league was different, and it didn't seem like he could break through. And even with Florida, when he had that great year, I was like, boy, I don't know if it's just because he's getting a ton of ice time. Sometimes when you get that much opportunity, you can put up a certain amount of points if you have some talent, but then if you know, go to another team and all of a sudden you're playing tougher minutes, it changes things, and it didn't change for him. So clearly he had overcome a hurdle based on the way the league is now, and you can be a smaller player and succeed. I think that's something that's really played into it too. So, I mean, those are the two important cogs for them, and I don't see anything letting up or being flukish about it. I got to, you know, say that. So, you know, that's where we're at. Here's the amazing thing for Derek Englund, too. You know, like last year he had 16 points. He had 25 points this year. Mm-hmm. 25 points is actually the most he's ever scored in his career.
Okay,
ever.
Man, that's, I mean, they've had a lot of guys that have had big jumps, right? I mean, it's just it's absolutely
actually
incredible.
23. It was 23 points.
Okay.
I had a bad vision on my point. But yeah, I mean, just, you know, this guy was, next year he was supposed to be in the front office. I'm getting the feeling he's going to play another year.
Right. So, well, why wouldn't you?
It's an amazing thing.
Yeah, although it could be a heck of a note to go out on, depending on how it goes here. Obviously,
sure.
If there's any one player that is getting, you know, the lion's share of attention coming into this series, it is Alex Ovechkin, one of the best players of his generation, getting his first chance in a Stanley Cup final. Some other great players there as well, some playmakers on the top lines there, Kuznetsov and Backstrom. Those guys are getting an opportunity here on this stage as well. There's another guy also, too, who I think at a prime point in his career, I think if he has a strong final and if he plays a strong role in Washington winning, and I quite frankly can't see them winning without him playing a strong role, could maybe possibly stake a case to being the best defenseman in the game today, and that's John Carlson. I think there's an awful lot at stake for his legacy in this series and how he gets seen.
Yeah, I think he would have a chance at the Conn Smythe if things rolled right and he turned it up just one more notch. I think it's gotten to the point now where he's priced himself out of Washington. I do. And good for him. I mean, he's always, you know, been a top guy, but I think in the last year coming into this season, maybe defensive play was being brought into question a little bit, certainly never his offense, and everything's been great for him this year, so you're right. I mean, when we're matching up these two teams, he's a massively important guy now because there really isn't that kind of John Carlson on the Vegas Golden Knights on
right.
The blue line. So that is another big thing where, but it's, you know, again, it's the Vegas team game. It's the way they play defense and they stay in your face. It reminds me of like playing man to man in the NBA. Could a team do that the whole game? Well, somehow Vegas can do that the whole game. And it really does bother some teams where you see in the NBA, nobody can play man to man for a whole game. It's just not possible.
Right.
But you know, Vegas has figured out a way where it feels like they are, and it's really been the team play for them, and then just having their big guys come through. Where Washington clearly, you know, has more talent, but that doesn't mean they're going to win. It just means they have more talent. I think Tampa had more talent than Washington, and they lost. So.
Well, that's true, yeah. And again, if you're looking statistically here, it's easier to say Washington has more talent in terms of they have more established names, guys who have a longer track record at this level. But I mean, if you're matching up 2017/18 stat sheets, Russ, that's one of those things where, you know, there's not as much difference here. If you just forget that these Vegas guys, you know, seemingly got this good 5 minutes ago, if you're just comparing stat sheets, boy, it looks pretty even.
Yeah, and I think it is going to be pretty even. I mean, once we get to the point where we make our predictions, you'll see where I'm coming from. But I think that's fair. I think this is going to be a great Stanley Cup. I think that some people think that the ratings won't be very good, but I think they forget that Vegas is a big TV market. You kind of touched on it when you were talking about places like Henderson and all these other places. It's a pretty big TV market, and sure, will it be a factor of some Canadians that will tune out because their team got eliminated again, or their country did, or I always find that nonsensical, but it's still a thing, sure. But I also think there's a lot of people in Canada that will be watching to root against Vegas and root for Ovechkin. So I think the ratings will be just fine. I don't think they're going to break records or anything, but I think it'll be pretty good.
Yeah, and it's a thing where, and it's been something that I've been bemoaning, I think, the better part of the time since you've been on the show, that, again, the increasing nichification of the NHL, much like the way MLB has kind of gotten to be, that there's only a real tiny handful of top guys in either sport.
However, I'm going to stop you there, though, because there have been games and parts of these playoff series that the NHL has actually led the night in ratings.
Yeah.
And in certain, you know, demographics. So that's something, even if you are nichified,
right,
it's really taking it even that to the next level where it, you know, it may never reach, and it never will reach numbers of the NFL or even the NBA, but these are pretty good numbers.
Right. Well, and the funny thing is, I was saying that to say this, is that we sort of have one of the exceptions to the nichification in that, again, in MLB and in the NHL, there are very few guys, unfortunately, who are household names in this day and age. But Alex Ovechkin is one of the more known guys in the NHL. Yeah. It's his first time on this stage. And this is one of these things I got to tell you, too, because unlike you, the bulk of my friends are outside the hockey bubble. So I get a lot more kind of sense of what casuals and even general non-fans think.
You
and
definitely can't go by me.
People are, you are not representative. You are in the bubble, my friend. I'll tell you what, from my perspective, people are feeling this Vegas thing. Like, this is insane. Like, this does not happen. You can't even compare this to St. Louis back in 68 because an expansion team was guaranteed to be in the finals due to that really weird setup and when they flipped from 6 to 12 teams all at once. So,
and much less teams. So,
yes. Yeah. I mean, there is no comparison here. The few comparisons that people have made across sports history, Leicester City in the English Premier League in 2016, maybe. I mean, for a team that was like, I think, 1,500-1 at the beginning of the year.
I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the few things that you could basically compare it to. This is so almost unprecedented in sports history, but it's grabbing people. It's the stylistic thing between the cities as well. It's the Eiffel Tower versus the Washington Monument. You know, you have a city that is just teeming with such sin and corruption and everything like that. And then you got Vegas on the other side, Russ. Forget about Washington. So, you know, you've got a fascinating...
I know we're getting to the point we're going to do the prediction. I do want to say, though, for people that are jaded that say, well, this whole thing was unfair, and boy, boo-hoo for my team because these guys are in the cup and my team can't get back to the Stanley Cup and, you know, plug in the year. You know, if it's the Canadians, it's 1993. If it's, you know, the Flyers, it's 74, 75. So, but the idea is, it's just, if you thought that this is what everybody thought, Vegas would never have had the Las Vegas Golden Knights set at 500-1 when the season began and people put some money down on that. They don't do that just for the fun of it, so you could have a chance of cashing a big ticket.
Right.
And now that possibility exists. But when we get to the predictions, I'll talk about something else I think Vegas is doing now. But the idea is, they didn't do that for fun. They thought that too.
Well, Well, we're close to getting to the point of predictions. I'll say this, and one of the things about the way that this Vegas team has been greeted locally, there's a certain amount to be said for being, again, the first major sports team in a market. And this is one of these things where a lot of people, at least out there who follow hockey, know this. People who are more casual may not know this. But again, their practices, like on weekday mornings, people show up, their practice rink is filled. The practices are free to come to, but they have a gift store that's there that does very good churning business. And I have a theory on the psychology of this, and it goes beyond, again, the community tightness from the tragedy that we said before. But one of my theories is this, as far as the psychology of Las Vegas, that if you live out there, you don't necessarily have to be a dealer at a casino to be somebody who is dependent on the tourists. One way or another, the overwhelming majority of people out there live to serve all of us who go out there on vacation. Most industries are built on that. And if you're a local, it's easy to feel invisible. Las Vegas is not a city for the locals. Las Vegas is a city for all of us who go there once a year, maybe. So to have something that's your own, I mean, you and I, we've called pro sports teams our own all our lives, and it means a lot to us. A, if you never had one before, and B, if you're really kind of an invisible person in your own town, as a lot of people feel out there, because they do just, you know, in their jobs, they're there a lot of times directly or indirectly for all of us. So this
that's
team maybe means more to them than it could mean to some of the rest of us in different circumstances.
I'm buying what you're selling. I am.
Yeah, that's just my theory on it as far as how that goes. But in terms of how this is breaking down, again, it's been a lot of unlikelihood going through the playoffs all the way through the way things have unfolded. I predicted after the last round that it was going to be Tampa and Winnipeg, so I think I'm only like 7-7. I got my worst playoff bracket in years. I am not doing well on my predictions. But again, those are kind of chalk-type ways to go, I think you could say, based on the amount of success that these teams had during the regular season. I've been picking against Vegas pretty much even during the playoffs. I think I might have had them over San Jose, but I don't think I had them in any other round. I'm going to go the other way on that. I'm going to say Vegas in seven. That just seems to be the only way that this whole thing could end. You know, the Stanley Cup gets handed to the Blue Man Group at the end of the game there, and they do the first skate with it. And, you know, I'm all in at this point. I know it's what I would like to see. No offense to the Caps or their fans or anything like that, but I want to see it play out. I want to see the Cinderella story, and I think it will. I think they have the ability to, what you're talking about, that style of play that they bring, the unparalleled kind of teamwork out there as far as especially defensively how they're able to put that blanket on people. And they got guys that, again, you know, if William Karlsson's going to wake up, it ain't going to be during the Stanley Cup Finals. It might be next year. I think Vegas keeps it going. I'm saying Knights in seven.
Well, they've revolutionized the pregame show, too, with
it's awesome.
With the pomp circumstance. It's been amazing. here's what I think. I think right now Vegas is like a minus 135, so they're the favorite.
Yep.
And I think I think the bookmakers did that on purpose because I think they felt like there are some people that threw the money down on Vegas just because it was a fun thing, and now I think they're going to get a lot of play on Vegas because it's become more real and people have the same feeling you do, like, hey, I want to see some history made here, but I'm going to sort of pop that bubble and say I don't think it's going to happen. I think the Caps are too physical. I think Ovechkin is the one force that, you know, the other side doesn't have. Vegas doesn't have anybody like him. Even if he's not scoring every game, he's just a physical, really just a physical force every game. And so between that, I think the goalies are a wash. Maybe you want to give the edge to Fleury. I wouldn't argue with you. At the end of the day, I'm going to go Caps in seven because the Caps finally did win a home game last series. That was big. They really needed to do that. And I also think the Caps play well on the road. They proved that. They won in Pittsburgh. That was the hardest place for them to ever win. So I do think they could win a game seven in Vegas. So I got Caps in seven, but I think we both think it's going to go seven, so that's interesting.
Yeah, I think we both are seeing it very similarly in that way and coming down to that last game. And you know, there's any number of people, I'm sure, that would have looked at it and said, Alex Ovechkin is going to win the Stanley Cup? Yeah, I'm sure that'll happen in Las Vegas, too, while we're at it. And according
the ratings in Russia will be great.
Well, here's the thing. You know, this occurred to me while we were talking here. Alex Ovechkin had envisioned the 2018 was going to be a great year for him for another reason, because until the Caps organization backed off of their threat to go ahead with this, they were going to let him go to South Korea and skate for Russia. And he saw himself, in his own mind's eye, skating off with a gold medal this year. Wouldn't it be ironic he gets deprived of that dream and then gets to end up going skating the Stanley Cup? And, you know, it's...
It can happen now.
Yeah. And it's one of the... It's interesting because this has been a decade where we've seen he's not the first guy to have made it this far. I know that this is kind of a you know, probably sore spot for you, but a great Hall of Fame caliber player in this decade who had a look at it, got to this stage, wasn't able to convert. Good old King Henrik there. Back in 2012. So it's interesting when you see a guy like that of that magnitude get to this stage. And based on the Caps' playoff history in years past, I mean, maybe this is a turning point for them, and maybe in years past they'll be more of a threat to make it back here. But, I mean, it's the same thing, I think, as it was for Henrik in 2012 there. You got to think this is Ovechkin's one good look at it, and it's going to be fascinating to see.
How he's going to leave it all out there.
Yeah, how it plays out and how it all goes. And, again, it is going to be an amazing spectacle on so many levels. The Stanley Cup Final, we never thought we would see. And, again, all of the skill and the style differentials and everything like that that will be on display. And I know that you and I will both enjoy watching this. And you perhaps in person here, depending on how this goes for one or two games.
I'll get in some games, there's no doubt.
Well, that's wonderful. I am very happy for you in that regard, my friend. So enjoy your coverage of it. Thank you so much, as always, for being here for our preview of it.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Aquafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.